It's an ancient land and a recent republic squeezed between Turkey and Russia. And it's offering free visas for eligible digital nomads while thousands of young Russians have been arriving to escape Putin's war. We'll hear some recent impressions of Georgia as a destination in a minute. Plus, a guide from Amsterdam updates us on how the Dutch are reining in the rowdy young crowds to make sure it's a city everyone can enjoy. And later on today's Travel with Rick Steves, we'll hear how Polynesian mariners settled the most isolated islands on Earth. In these days of crowdsourcing and Instagram herd mentality, where everybody seems to go to the same places, a lot of people are looking for travel destinations that are off the grid, with no crowds at all. A good example of that is Georgia, in the far east of Europe. This is a place that has a fascinating cultural heritage, beautiful countryside, and no crowds. Tour guide Tim Tendick is just back from a visit to Georgia, and he joins us today to share what he found. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to talk about a place like Georgia with you.
So, Tim, I've never been to Georgia. I'm curious, but you've been to Georgia several times. What appeals to you about Georgia? Why should somebody bother to go that far east on a European vacation?
Georgia is a great example of the way cultures can blend as you end up on the frontier. If you think of a more familiar one, it would be in southern Spain, as you go towards Andalusia, and you see some of that Moorish influence combining, that sort of thing you can see vividly in a country like Georgia, because you can be in Tbilisi, and it has a lot in common with maybe Vienna or more familiar elements there, as well as further eastern kind of Near East things. And then you can head over to Batumi. That's kind of the second city. It's over on the beach there. So you have a beachside promenade, and it's, in one sense, it almost feels like Miami, but then on that promenade, you can have bikinis and burkas walking down the same promenade. Oh, and that blend of cultures, to me, is just absolutely fascinating, because you know every element there has its own story to tell.
I mean, so many of us go, I go to Italy, I go to Spain, I go to Ireland time and time again, and you could fly to Frankfurt or Berlin, and then instead of connecting south, you could connect east, and you could fly into the capital city of Tbilisi. You're in a country surrounded by Turkey, Russia, Armenia, the Black Sea. It's been independent since the fall of the Soviet Union, about 1991. It's got just under 4 million people, 80% or so are Eastern Orthodox, part of the Russian Empire for nearly 200 years. Stalin was born there. I mean, talk about a fascinating yet mysterious country. Describe for me just the red tape that's involved. Do you need a visa? How about changing money? What about the language barrier? How expensive is it?
You know, this is one where an American passport really pays off. I really had no problem going there. My first time going to Georgia was on a whim. I had been in Central Asia for a while. I was in Kyrgyzstan and then wandered to Kazakhstan and then thought, well, where do I want to go now? And all the flights to Georgia, a lot of them go through Istanbul. So I got to Istanbul and I thought, I'm going to go see Georgia. So I just flew out there on a whim and it was really quite easy. And then changing money and everything was fine. Tbilisi is a little expensive because it's known as a destination for digital nomads. And I think that might be having an effect. But certainly as you move around, it's quite easy. The language is tricky because I was getting a little bit adept at Cyrillic, but you get to Georgia and the script looks like nothing you've ever seen. I couldn't really tell where the letters were. So that part was a little difficult. And the words are amazing. They put more consonants together than I thought anybody other than a Scrabble bag would ever attempt. But it works. You just kind of, you give it a go. And I actually never had a problem with finding people who spoke English as I moved around the country. A little bit of patience. Occasionally some charade skills were necessary. Right. But for the most part, I never had a problem. And I always felt welcome. I always felt safe. It was a remarkable country to move around in.
And what's the cost of living there for a traveler?
If you get out of Tbilisi, it was entirely reasonable. I based myself in Kutaisi for a while because there are so many day trips and things to do there. I could rent a car for quite cheap and just drive out into the Georgian countryside and go visit these amazing caves or go visit a dinosaur park. They have all sorts of things. Because that area, I don't know if you're familiar with Jason and the Argonauts. They think he was headed to Colchis. And that Colchis, the capital of Colchis, is what is now Kutaisi. So as I moved around, I kept seeing myself as, you know, following in the footsteps of Jason and the Argonauts. So anywhere you go just has this sense of history. And
okay, but actually for the cost, if you're thinking about the cost of Paris or Vienna or Rome, would Tbilisi, the capital, be about the same or less expensive?
Tbilisi surprised me with how expensive it was. Some of the restaurants, I had to do the calculation a couple times. I thought, am I in Paris? But the accommodation was definitely less. And then it's one of these things where as you move into some of the neighborhoods, you can find more of a locals place and it'll get a little cheaper. But Tbilisi is more like kind of Western Europe standards in some areas. And then as you move out into the other cities, it definitely gets a lot less expensive.
Travel writer, tour guide, and world traveler Tim Tendick is telling us about his recent discoveries in the country of Georgia right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Hey, Tim, when I'm thinking about Georgia, I can't help but think about Ukraine and the tragedy that's going on between Russia and that former Soviet state. I get this sense that Russia doesn't like a former Soviet state like Ukraine or Georgia succeeding and getting more affluent and more democratic and more pluralistic and more Western-looking. And that almost makes Russia want to come in and topple them and bring them back into the Russian fold as opposed to the Western-looking fold. And I know there's been civil unrest and demonstrations in Georgia recently because people there want to go closer to Europe and more distant from Russia. What is the vibe in Georgia right now when you consider what's going on a little bit over the border in Ukraine?
I think you're absolutely right. Russia definitely prefers weak states. If you have a weak state near to them, then they can get in and they can influence. You can maybe bribe a politician and you can buy some assets and some infrastructure. So they don't have a problem with that. But when you have a strong government, they definitely will try to weaken that and attack that. Georgia is a great example of that. And the Georgians know it because when I was in California and we saw some Ukrainian flags here and there, and then I went to Western Europe and was taking some of your tours around, and you see more flags there, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Central Asia. I was in Kazakhstan, which is very much under the Russian umbrella, and there was not a single Ukrainian flag to be seen anywhere. And I got to Georgia, and I don't think there is a single car or house that doesn't have a Ukrainian flag sticker in the window. There are so many statements of solidarity. When I first got there, I was having my first meal, and I started talking to the man who owned the restaurant. And he said, a third of our country is occupied by Russia. You bet we're paying attention to Ukraine.
Oh.
You know, we can understand what it's like to be occupied by that. Because after the war in Abkhazia, the Russians supported one side in a kind of ethnic cleansing situation. And the Georgians see it as that part of their country is occupied right now.
I would think the Georgians understand that the front line for them against Russia is Ukraine, just like NATO sees it that way and most Americans see it that way. This is our fight. This is Georgia's fight. This is Germany's fight to contain Russia, and it's being played out on the Ukrainian battlefield.
As you move around a city, I always like to pause a moment and read what the graffiti says. Mm-hmm. It can sometimes give you kind of an insight into the zeitgeist of that community. And for example, I've been in countries and seen maybe statements about the police in countries that don't have a problem with the police, just as a statement of youth and discontent. But in Georgia, there were a lot of statements about Russians going home, a lot of things about Russians not being welcome, a lot of stencils of Putin's face and saying various things. And there was one particular wall near the apartment I was staying in where someone had written a reply. They'd written, "Not all Russians are Putin." And the other graffiti artists, the other people with paint, had replied to that and basically made clear in no uncertain terms that whether you considered yourself Putin or not, Russia was persona non grata. Right. How do you say that for a country? Country non grata.
Right.
Like, they're very aware of it.
You wrote an interesting blog on your website. And your website, again, is vagabondurges.com. You wrote a blog about an experience you had in Saltubo in Georgia and talking about, you know, the long association Russia and Georgia have had together. Didn't Stalin, of course, came from Georgia, and he used to go to the spas there just to soak, didn't he?
He did. He had some knee pain, and in the Soviet Union, the doctor could write you a prescription for a little R&R. You had to go out for a couple of weeks, and it was seen as your duty as an individual and as the state's duty to provide for you. So they built a whole ring of different sanatoriums and spas and amazing facilities based on the healing properties of the water there, which don't last once you take it out of the ground. So you can't bottle it. You can't ship it. You have to go there. So in addition to a place like Sochi, you also had Skultubo. And so you had this ring of a dozen different sanitariums they're very ornate. They're very interesting in the kind of the Soviet architecture. But after the dissolution of the Soviet Union, they were just abandoned for years and they started crumbling. So as you move around them, they're rather striking.
You know, this is just a good example of how if you want to broaden your perspectives, if you're tired of the high costs and the high crowds of Western Europe, there are places to go. And Georgia would be one of them. Georgia's respected for its wine. Georgia's got all of this fascinating heritage. And, you know, when I was in Russia, when people wanted to eat out and go someplace a little different, everybody would just light up and enthusiastically agree, let's eat Georgian.
Absolutely.
What is it about Georgian cuisine? Tim, let's finish our conversation just by letting you enthuse a bit about what makes Georgian food such a hit in Russia.
It is in Russia. It's amazing all around. That flavor, that combination of bold flavors. They love cheese. They definitely love their garlic. You can have, you know, a kachapuri bread with the cheese in it is a baseline to go with any of these things. I believe you might have talked about khinkali before. A lot of cultures have different types of dumplings. You know, you have peleni and tortellini, all these different types of dumplings. But in Georgia, they fill it with soup. It's a larger dumpling. You hold it by kind of the pinched part of the dough at the top. Yeah. And you take that bite and you have to drink it. You have to slurp it down really fast. And then you can leave that little tail of the dumpling on your plate. And at the end, it almost feels like bragging rights. You get to say how many of these you managed to get down, but they're delicious with different spice meat.
That takes me right back to a Georgian restaurant in St. Petersburg where all my Russian friends were gathering around, kind of laughing at my inability to elegantly bite off a little bit of that dumpling and drink it. It was a mess, but it was tasty.
It definitely takes practice, but it's something that's fun to work on.
Tim Tendick, thanks so much for joining us and giving us a little insight into Georgia. Happy travels, and let's talk again soon.
Sounds good to me. Happy travels, Rick.
You can read Tim Tendick's postings from his travels, including photos from the abandoned spas of Saltovo, and learn more about his tours to Romania. It's on his website, vagabondurges.com. We'll look at how we understand the origins of Polynesia, where mariners settled the vast Pacific for 1,000 years before European explorers ever arrived. But first, a local guide updates us on what you need to know for visiting Amsterdam. It's Travel with Rick Steves.